Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us here at KMXT for another episode of Talk of the Rock. I'm your host today, Dylan Smart, and joining me are Steve Wilebski, the president of Kodiak Island Search and Rescue, and Blaine Smith, an instructor for the Alaska Avalanche School. How are the two of you doing today?
Well, thank you.
Very well.
Okay. So, one thing I wanted to ask you about avalanches, let's just start people off easy. What is an avalanche?
Well, in the snow context, it's a basically a plate of snow that liberates itself from the side of adequately steep mountainsides to slide down the mountain to lower slope angles where it stops and piles up. So it's a big bunch of snow that comes down as a large unit, big mass.
So in general, to my understanding, avalanches are very typical natural phenomena, but they can also be caused by human intervention. Can you describe for me the dangers of an avalanche and why people need to be wary of them?
Well, they're absolutely a natural phenomenon. They happen all the time, you know, in the mountains. As most backcountry travelers will tell you, they're quite common without any kind of interference or instigation by people, and the hazard exists out there in the natural environment, and the risk comes to people when they interject themselves into kind of this natural system. And so people, if the snowpack is dangerous resides in a close balance between stress and strength, people can provide the extra additional amount of stress onto the snowpack to cause a collapse and trigger an avalanche. And there are many different types of avalanches, and the slab avalanche is the one that we predominantly concentrate on because it's responsible for the far majority of human involvements and fatalities. And so the slab avalanche is the type of avalanche that can engulf a larger area of snow. And so if you are a person, you trigger a slab avalanche, then you can find yourself in the middle of a large area that's sliding down the mountain, and then in the process of going down the mountain, you can be buried and then, you know, deprived of air.
Pretty much
that's the problem.
So I want to keep us on topic as far as avalanches go. And you said that slab avalanches are certainly your main concern. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other types? Because I had no idea up until this very moment that there were more than one type of avalanche.
Yeah, well, so slab avalanches are the predominant type, and that's when you see, sometimes you'll see these graphs portraying, you know, what slope angles avalanches happen at, and those are, and these graphs that you see sometimes are specific to slab avalanches, and that's, you know, slab avalanche activity can happen anywhere between 25 and on up slope angles, but they do diminish as the slope angles get above 45 and steeper. To answer directly your question, the other types of avalanches could be wet loose avalanches, which we're starting to enter that season where, as the snowpack heats up, then small point slides will start that don't come out as a large plate that engulfs a lot of snow. They start out as a small point, and then they usually will adopt this kind of alluvial shape fan, and then they'll entrain all of just surface snow. Mm-hmm. So there's wet loose. There's also dry loose that happens right after a storm where you get a whole bunch of, you know, new snow, usually at lower densities or colder temperatures. You end up with dry loose. Other avalanches are like a cornice fall. Usually as a result of wind action or excessive loading or warming, cornices can fall and they can perpetrate their own avalanche that can be different than a slab avalanche or something like that. They can also provide the trigger for big slab avalanches. All of those things can happen in the natural environment, but it's the slab avalanche, basically this large plate of snow that comes loose that from the side of the mountain that causes us the most trouble.
So let's localize the phenomena of avalanches to Kodiak. What are the types of avalanches that folks out here need to worry about, and where are the places that they need to be thinking about them?
Well, you guys have the full gamut. There's certain types of avalanches that your particular climate and snowpack kind of tend towards. You can experience all of the different types of avalanches that there are. And so probably the best way to pin it down is a slope angle. So slopes that are 30 degrees or greater are prone to avalanching of all types, and that includes slab avalanches. Slab avalanches have a little bit different character, and they have a little bit different type of predictability, but they all reside kind of in that zone of 30 degrees and higher. And so within Kodiak, you guys have mostly a melt-freeze snowpack. That is to say that, it'll snow a bit, and then it'll rain on it, then it'll freeze, and then it'll snow, and then it'll rain, then it'll freeze. And so you end up with this extremely hard, bulletproof snowpack pretty much all the way down to the ground. As long as that mass stays frozen, it's really quite stable. Maritime snowpacks, as you have in Kodiak, are usually you guys enjoy quite a bit of stability with that. Mm-hmm. Well, the problems come in when you have a new storm that will add snow to the top of this, if it doesn't bond well to snow doesn't bond well to what's below it, you can end up with some weak layers that are on top of that hard surface that could be overcapped by some more dense layers. And so to be a little more clear about that is what you're looking for is you're looking for hard over soft. And so all sitting on a bed surface. And so in Kodiak, as far as slab avalanches go, one of the major types that you can get is wind slab over unconsolidated snow on top of your usual melt freeze stack of junk at the bottom of the snowpack. And so that's a typical setup for Kodiak, where you can have wind slab activity. And then the other type of typical setup for Kodiak is that later in the spring, when the snowpack goes isothermal, that is to say it gets just so much warming that the whole thing turns to mush, your snowpack can still retain enough cohesiveness that it can act still as a unit, and you'll have failure of the entire snowpack on the ground surface, and that's usually a late spring kind of phenomena. And those are called wet slabs. Mm-hmm. And so it's usually, for Kodiak, it's going to be wind slab over some type of unconsolidated snow. In the case like what you've got out there right now, you've got some wind slab over some facets. And facets are basically unconsolidated kind of sugar snow. And so that's one problem that you have right now in Kodiak. And we're taping this in April 11th.
Right.
And then the other problem that's starting to develop right now is you're going to start to see some wet loose. And that means, all of the steep southerns are going to heat up, and you're going to have those point releases that entrain a little bit of snow, and then a little bit more, a little bit more. They should make these alluvial shaped fans, and you'll get wet loose slides. And eventually this will progress as the snowpack warms to a point where you're going to have wet slab releases on the steeper slope angles. Anything that is not steep enough to release in a wet slab fashion, you're going to end up, it'll go through a whole bunch of cycles of freeze-thaw, and then a whole bunch of thaw, and you'll end up with a residual snowpack that'll last, quite a long time into the summer. That'll be super stable, and that's what everybody lives for in Kodiak, is to ski the corn snow in June, So that's pretty much how the cycle's going to go.
So let me ask you another question here. I haven't really skied much on Kodiak, but I've been to places like Whistler and what have you, some of the larger resorts. Mm-hmm. I mean, evidently, there's always a risk of avalanche anytime you're on a mountain. But when I was living out there, you know, it was sort or living within driving distance, let's put it.
Okay.
So you would go up there, and there was a general sense that, like, you didn't really need to be too afraid of avalanches because they were up there dynamiting the hills beforehand. You know, you'd be going up the lifts early in the morning, and you'd hear the boom, boom, you know, going, far off in the distance. What's sort of the difference of skiing and doing snow sports in a place like that versus in a rural environment, and what sort of responsibilities do skiers need to take up in order to make sure that they're staying safe?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what I call the backcountry snowpack, I call it a wild snowpack. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been manipulated or controlled in any way. Within bounds, in a ski area, you have a whole bunch of folks that are responsible for managing the snowpack, usually with some type of force mechanism. Usually it's explosives. Sometimes they're hand charges. Sometimes they're, explosive rounds fired from, a recoilless rifle or, 105 howitzers, even if you're talking about some of the old school way that they used to do it. But at any rate, when you have an instability in the snowpack, let's say there's a hard over a weak layer, and if you can, before that area is inhabited by people, you don't have any risk because there's nobody there, but you do have hazard. And so rather than wait until you get somebody to blunder out there and trigger the thing, well, you can add enough force to the snowpack via a detonation or an explosive and get that instability basically to come out before anybody gets there. So you're removing some of the instability. You're also in the process of getting the snow to move. You mix layers. Quite a bit of avalanche retardant, basically, that happens when you apply a lot of force like that. And so the ski patrol, they know the areas that need to be managed like that. They keep a close eye on it. And if they can't manage it, then they'll close certain areas. And so I think anybody that skied inside an area knows that you're not supposed to duck the lines. You're not supposed to go, where the ski patrol has not had a chance to manage that. Or it's basically deemed that it's just not safe. So you've got somebody else looking out for you. Whereas when you're in the backcountry, none of that work has been done. You have to look out for yourself. And so your primary duty is to analyze the snowpack and the terrain that you're in, manage your position in the terrain so that you do not get caught. Sometimes folks will kind of miss that point. They'll think that avalanche safety is all about learning rescue skills. And that is part of it, but it's a very small part compared to the skills to be able to manage your position in the terrain and be able to assess the snowpack to avoid the hazard to begin with. Because being caught in an avalanche is a traumatic and very dangerous event, and rescue is a very poor response to the hazard. You should basically not get in an avalanche.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I think we've introduced folks to what an avalanche is. Let's talk a little bit about the work you do as an instructor. Tell me about what you've done over this weekend, your class, the class structure, and what folks are going to learn from when they show up to when they leave.
Okay, so as an instructor, it's my responsibility to provide the information that people will need to be a good backcountry partner and a good backcountry traveler, responsible for not only themselves but all of their partners. So a typical course will start off with a day of rescue, and we'll spend 8 hours or so in the field going over all of the different rescue technologies, standard rescue gears, a transceiver. It's a radio device that you wear on your person that transmits a signal. And then if you're buried, your companions can switch their transceiver to receive, and then they can follow an electromagnetic pulse signal into where you're buried and then dig you up, hopefully within the amount of time that you have, for the amount of oxygen that you have available to you. So we talk about, how to do rescues, how avalanches work, strategies for doing rescues, how to work in a team, how to communicate in a team, how to practice properly, how to add realism to your practice. We talk about some of the psychological aspects of rescue and how to, reduce some of the stresses, what kind of stresses to expect. Basically, just trying to prepare people as closely as we can to respond properly to an avalanche. And so we need to teach rescue the first day, because we're going to go into rescue. We're going to go into avalanche terrain starting the second day and the third day. And so we can't responsibly take people into avalanche terrain until they have the skills at least to pull off a rescue. First day's rescue, then the second day we go out into avalanche terrain, and we talk about how to assess snow, how to look for the red light clues. Most avalanches happen during or shortly after storm activity. So you can expect that you're going to have some type of problems when you go out during those periods. And so perhaps you should, at least be very cautious when you go out, and perhaps avoid avalanche terrain. And I don't mean stay out of the mountains. I mean just stay out of the slope angles that produce avalanches. And when we go out into the backcountry, the second day we're going to look for those red light clues. We're going to look for shooting cracks that go out at least the length of your ski or the length of your machine beyond where you're standing. We're going to look for or listen for and feel collapsing snow. That's a hard layer over a weak layer. And so when we get a collapse of the snowpack, that's a big red light clue that avalanche activity is imminent. So shooting cracks, collapsing snow. I should have mentioned this one first, but other avalanche activity, it's surprising how many times there's avalanches happening within your area, but those things get ignored and people get caught. And so if you see avalanches happening, well, that's a great big sign that, yes, the snow is very unstable and you should stay off of avalanche terrain. And then thaw activity, rapidly rising temperatures that break the freezing mark, as we're starting to experience now, should make you cautious and wary of getting into, steep terrain that could potentially avalanche. So need to be careful of those things. There's some caveats in there that we could discuss if you were taking the class, but I'll just leave it at that.
Sure.
And so then we do some gathering of clues, we show people some quick tests that they can do while they're out recreating, that you don't have to take out a shovel, you don't have to dig a pit, because most folks that are familiar with of analyzing snow, they think, you dig a pit and you look at layers and stuff like that. And that's a very small part of your entire assessment. It is part of your snow assessment, but it's not the biggest part.
Sure.
But nevertheless, we do talk about profile technologies and recognizing different types of snow types within the pit that lend themselves to be more prone to avalanching. We call those things structure points. And so we talk about snow structure in this class, like a level one class, we boil it down to basically hard over soft. And so we're just looking for hard over soft combinations. And so we talk about, how to analyze snow. And then the third day is mostly a terrain management day. So we talk about, where is the metaphorical avalanche street? How do you avoid, blundering into a bad situation? So we don't tell people that they can't recreate in avalanche terrain, because it's an ideal slope angle to ski. And that's where we're kind of looking for the goods when you're going out to recreate in the backcountry. So we don't tell them that they can't go into avalanche terrain. What we teach is before you go into avalanche terrain, you should know something about the snowpack, and you should make an informed decision as to whether this is a good idea for you or not. And so that's what the third day is about. We say, okay, now we know about the snowpack. Here's an area right here. Is this avalanche terrain? And if it is avalanche terrain, you know, is it dramatically avalanche terrain? Like, so for instance, you know, right at the edge of what can happen is like 30 degrees, but prime time's 38. And there's a huge difference between a 30 degree slope and a 38 degree slope. 38 degree slope, you know, that I... the statistic is escaping me, but most human-triggered avalanches occur right at 38 degrees. Mm. That's where they kick them off. And not so much at 30. 30 is kind of the bottom margin of what we call red light terrain. But anyway, so they analyze the snow, and they take that analyzation of the snow to the terrain, put it on the terrain, and then they decide, is it within their acceptable level of risk? And you know, it's a great discussion amongst the group as to, well, you know, is it or isn't it? The thing about predicting any kind of natural system, avalanches or whatever, is that there is no certainty. The only thing that you come out with after all of this is it probably won't or it probably will. And so with that uncertainty, you have to... you know, put yourself in there. You know, if you're a young man, 25 years old, no responsibilities, and nothing's ever hurt you in your past, sometimes it probably won't is good enough.
Yeah.
But for other people that have maybe seen a little bit more, or have a few more responsibilities, probably not is not good enough. They won't go near it. So it's an interesting juxtaposition of the human wants and desires and our ability to make decisions with, you know, this data that we collect. And we end up in kind of these gray areas a little bit where we have a certain amount of uncertainty. And we have to make decisions in that environment.
So in other words, as opposed to coming into a community and saying, go here, not here, you're giving people the judgment and skills to make those sorts of decisions on their own.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're in the business of empowering people to make decisions. Yeah. And so this is, you got a push button issue for me here, but, yeah, a lot of folks that are involved in safety education, particularly avalanche stuff, they say, oh, we're in the business of saving lives. And yes, that's true. We do provide information that has saved people's lives. They've made good decisions, and that has saved them. It's really hard to measure non-events, though. You know, how many people have you saved, and how many haven't you? And it's just, that's a tough one. I like to think about... you know, saving lives is more about, rather than that way, I think it's more about empowering people. I mean, Alaska is a beautiful place. We have such a great environment. There's a good chance within our state. It's an excellent opportunity to get out, be active in the outdoors, and, you know, enjoy the sunshine, have good relationships with your partners. And, I mean, it's just... it's an amazing place, and to empower people to feel like they can go out and enjoy that. I mean, a lot of people, they just hang back. They don't go in the mountains. They don't go out in these places because, well, there's avalanches. But the avalanches only happen in certain places, and they only happen under certain conditions. And if we can educate people as to those places and conditions, we can turn them loose. They can live a good, long, happy life enjoying what our state has to offer. And so, I mean, that's how it happened for me, and I'd like to, for other people to have advantage, you know, take advantage of that as well.
Sure. So I had another question for you. I had heard that avalanche instruction in these types of classes was not dissimilar from, say, scuba diving classes in the effect that they occur at different levels and people are taught different things at the different levels. Could you go over those different levels and degrees of avalanche safety instruction and what type that you're doing here locally?
Well, so there's two tracks that you can follow. There's a recreational track and there's a professional track. And then there's, well, and then there's a rescue track that kind of fits in between the two of them. So we did a rec level one, and that's a 3-day class. So there's some online portions that they have to do. It's a standard course that's endorsed by the American Avalanche Association, and the Alaska Avalanche School is a provider we're a member of the American Avalanche Association, and we're a recognized provider. And so we do the rec level one, there's a rescue course that's also offered, and then there's a rec level two. And sometimes those things are blended within each other, so there's a little bit of leeway in there. And then after you've gone through a rec level one and a rescue, there is the opportunity that you could branch off into the professional series. And that's for aspiring. So there's a pro one, there's a pro two. The pro one is for aspiring avalanche professionals like ski patrollers or DOT work, folks that might want to work for DOT, or they might want to work for, you know, the avalanche school, or, you know, a number of different, you know, avalanche kind of based organizations or operations. It's pretty surprising how many there are. But at any rate, it's for somebody who would like to work in that realm. And it's basically the goal of the Pro One class is to provide the information and the skills for a person to be a working member or a contributing and working member of an avalanche team. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you're going to learn everything, but it gets you, you know, in the door where you can be mentored along. And it's strong on rescue. There's a pretty stringent rescue test that you have to do, multiple burials within just a certain amount of time that you have to recover. And it's a physical course, but it's also quite a cerebral course because you have to learn basically the language of the avalanche professional. Some people call it the hieroglyphics of the avalanche professional. Mm. And then the Pro 2 takes you into more operations management and a lot more of kind of big picture thinking. So that's the American system. The Canadians have a whole different system. The Swiss have a whole different system. But, you know, they're basically a rec track and a pro track. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you as well. To my understanding, there have not been very many casualties in Kodiak historically, avalanche wise.
No, but this would be a much better question for Steve.
Mm.
Well, yes.
Get you a little closer to the mic.
Yeah, it's been quite a while. You know, about 25 years ago, there was a large group of snow machiners, and they were traveling up in the mountains pretty frequently, and we had more snow. We've had a kind of a few years, although it's changed this year, where we had almost no snow down here at sea level. So anyway, it's probably been 20 years ago where we had a fatality, and it was just a group of snow machiners up in the mountains, and there had been reports of avalanches happening. We had a snowpack that had some failure layers in it, and they just happened to go out and get caught, and they didn't have avalanche safety equipment, so it was very difficult for them there to find the people. And actually, one of the guys was buried for over an hour, but luckily had an air pocket next to his head. And eventually, one of the rescue members, the other snow machinist, stepped into the hole where he was, and he grabbed the guy's ankle and freaked him out. But anyway, pretty lucky that happened. And so we had one of the longest burials where the guy didn't, you know, he had air, so he was, you know. But yeah, that was, it's been a while. And, you know, we've just been kind of lucky, I think, because there hasn't been, we've had a number of years where you couldn't get up in the mountains without, you know, because there wasn't a lot of snow around the trailheads, where that's a little different this year. So, and it kind of comes and goes, I guess, with skiers. And I've seen in the last 2 years, it went from, you know, you'd see one or two people on the mountain maybe on a Saturday afternoon, where now you could see 15 people on the mountain. There's a lot more people skiing and getting out in the backcountry, and I'm assuming it's the same thing. We've seen a few more snow machines up there. So yeah, it's just a frequency of travel in the backcountry has been at a kind of a slowdown the last few years, and now it's picking up again. So that's why we brought these instructors in to give a class. And it's, you know, that's kind of, that's, we're trying to do preventive precautionary stuff to teach people about avalanches and being safe when they travel in the mountains.
Well, on that note, I realize now that we have exhausted our time, and it's it really flew by for me. This has been really interesting. I wanted to thank you both for coming on. I really appreciate it. And this has been another episode of KMXT 100.1 FM's Talk of the Rock. I've been your host today, Dylan Simard, and joining me was Steve Walebski, the president of Kodiak Island Search and Rescue, and Blaine Smith, an instructor for the Alaska Avalanche School. Thank you both so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much. Enjoy.